Welcome to The School Bell, a podcast discussing the topics that matter to independent schools. I'm your host, Jeff Lysons. In today's podcast, we chat with Nigel Harris about philanthropy and fundraising in a school context.
No one has any obligation to give voluntarily. So what is it that actually creates the sense of connection, of desire, of place that actually takes people into a situation where not only will they ask, but they're actually very ready to be asked as well?
Nigel helps charities and non-profit organisations, including schools, develop philanthropic and fundraising leadership for social impact. Nigel also works with funders to optimise their philanthropic experience. With a career spanning nearly 40 years, Nigel is one of Australia's most experienced and successful Health Foundation CEOs and a respected advisor to organisational leaders, fundraising executives and donors. Also joining us is ISQ's very own School Services Deputy Director, Johannes Shimoshi. Johannes oversees the delivery of the ISQ Governance Program and has many years' experience as an educator in Germany and Australia. He's also been the principal of two Queensland independent schools. So, Nigel, before we dig into our discussion about philanthropy, can you tell us a little bit about your early life and schooling experiences?
Absolutely. I grew up in Adelaide, in South Australia. In year two, my parents or my father did a stint in country South Australia, so I went to three schools in the 1 year in year two, which was an interesting experience at that age. But I did my secondary education in a private school in Adelaide, Poulton Grammar School, which is around 150 years old now, actually, and was a single-sex boys school when I was there, but it's since gone co-ed.
Why is philanthropy something that schools should be considering?
I like to talk about philanthropy both in its definition, love of people, but the idea of building a community. So I see schools as a community, and not just a community for a particular moment in time, but one that potentially has a longevity about it as well. So even as I reflect on my own experience in schooling, perhaps part of that, I'll call it disconnect, in no negative sense, is where that community is focused. I'm sure it continues to be a very strong focus on current scholars and those people that have proximity to the school. But I often muse on this potential of a broader connection with people who have moved through the school, have moved beyond that, both geographically and in other ways, but still may have a latent sense of connection. So I think the idea here is about how you create a community that people feel part of, not just in a physical sense of direct participation, but in a broader sense of feeling like you belong somewhere. And I think that's a real opportunity for schools and indeed all manner of organisations, but particularly schools to think about, particularly when we think about the nature of the experience we have at school. Arguably, it's one of the most shaping and profound experiences we'll have, from the very good to the very bad. But we're immersed in school, and so how we might then perpetuate that sense of connection through different phases of our life is an interesting question that we might explore, and I think it's a huge question for independent schools.
Did you want to add anything to that, Johannes?
I think for me, schools are institutions that are founded on a very lofty ideal, right? They are there to provide a benefit to our community. We think that students who are well educated, they have a certain sense of educational well-being, and we know that that educational well-being translates into the well-being of a society, and that's what schools are there for. And so I think schools really can tap into that sense of a love of humans that philanthropy is all about. And so people who have a sense of philanthropy and a calling to it, they have a strong connection to the idea of adding flourishing through the vehicle of schools. And so I think that's where the connection is. Schools add flourishing to individuals and therefore society, and people with a philanthropic heart can use those schools as a vehicle by which they can give effect to their love of humans. And so that's where, for me, the connection and the benefit stands for schools.
For someone like myself, not really having any background in philanthropy, it's always been in my mind, it's all about giving money. But as you describe it, it's a combination of fundraising, volunteering and advocacy. Can you break down those three elements?
So the love of people is something that we all are drawn into in different measures. As people, we gravitate to others. So I think the idea of philanthropy being human experience, response, if you will, to each other is one set of ideas. Then what is it in the exercising of that experience are we called to do? How do we actually fulfill a way of expressing that experience? And those gifts that we give, which we might give time, we might give voice to something that's important to us, we might actually give other gifts of value such as money to further the human experience, to further the benefit that's being realised. So I think thinking about this in a continuum and in its different forms is a really important way to consider how philanthropy is exercised. The idea that we often look at a single transaction as the value of a donation. Mm. So if I give $1,000, then it's seen to be a gift of a certain level. But if I give $100 a month over 12 months, then I'm actually giving more. But if we count the single transaction, we may not see that. But more than that, it's also about often that first smaller gift is something of an early phase of a relationship. There's a bit of mutual testing here in terms of engagement and interest. And so we're going to think about that in the continuum. The other important consideration, I think, is often lost both in school environments and beyond, but I think it's particularly true in schools, is following that lifetime journey of people's stage in life and disposition. So I think personally around this, I turned 63 10 days ago. So I'm at a phase in my life when I'm a little more reflective about those things that have shaped and influenced my life experience than I would have been 30 and 40 years ago. So I look back to an old school and think perhaps a little more fondly of it, and even a sense of gratitude to the experiences that have shaped my experience to date. So, you know, I'd contend I'd perhaps be more open to giving, but also in a better place. You know, my wife and I have adult children, our financial situations have changed in that time. So once again, thinking about age and stage and circumstances, and I'm not sure we always do that if we don't think about the donor themselves. If we think about just what I need as an institution, we may miss those really important observations. But I do wonder about that bigger cohort of, we'll call it alumni, people who've had an experience, and sometimes they're very hard to keep track of and find. But these days, perhaps that's easier than it ever has been. But what's that sense of connection that could be exercised well beyond that direct school involvement?
Can you explain a little bit more about what you mean around advocacy or voice?
It's an important question, and one that actually, interestingly, I think gets overlooked in all manner of experiences. So we can see giving time, volunteering, played out in a very real sense. We also see giving of whether it's financial donations or other gifts of value. I think there's so often a key in advocacy. When I'm actually engaged in something, I feel part of something to the extent to which I will happily give my voice to it. I'll seek to raise my association in various conversations or forums. I'm happy to be seen to be associated with something. So that's really what we're talking about with advocacy. So this, I think, is fundamental to how we see ourselves inside a community, and perhaps almost is the first step that can often come before giving of time or giving of money. In many ways, it's the easiest thing we might do. Giving voice in many respects is as simple as it's ever been, because we have mediums to project the voice, social media, other connections that make it easier to engage with each other. So I think, you know, how do I feel about being part of something that I'm going to freely, voluntarily talk to that association and talk well of it?
I think that's a really good way to describe that long game that we play in developing a relationship with a donor or potential donor and creating that level of engagement, which might start as easy as the person clicking like on a LinkedIn post by your school. That like will accelerate the message to their networks. That's a very low level step, but it includes a conscious decision to press that button, associating yourself with that organization. And then comes the next step. So I think that stepping stones concept from small to large and back again, that is really important to keep in mind when we are creating our strategies about engagement.
Recognizing that holistic nature of advocacy. So it's not just about advocating to give donations. In fact, that's not so much what we're talking about here. It's advocating for the school. It's ethos, its values, the experience it's created, which goes to enrollments, it goes to participation, it goes to a raft of things which creates that community within which then people see themselves as giving other gifts. And so I think that broader experience, to me, it's probably the most underutilized gift in any form of philanthropic expression.
At ISQ, we represent many different types of schools, from newly established schools to schools that have been operating for 20, 30 years, to schools that have been around for maybe 100 years. For schools in those three broad categories, what are some of the opportunities and challenges that they have in terms of attracting philanthropy?
I think for very new schools, those that are really in their early stages of evolution, it's a great opportunity to do something that my late father-in-law used to talk about. That was start as you aim to finish. That is to create an environment really from the beginning that talks to the culture and the experience of the school and the way that you really want people to not just experience it in that direct engagement through education of students and participation of families, but beyond that in the future. So I think a terrific opportunity really to shape a future view as well as the current state. I think for those schools that are in that 20 to 30 year gap, make the observation that's a generational cycle. So you really have school leavers who are a generation on from their school experience. They may have their own families, their own school involvement, but it's also about the movement of that initial cohort and then subsequent students into their next phases of life and how you might engage them in that context as well. I think for the older schools, it's an interesting question. I mean, in many cases, maybe the die has already been set, but it's never too late to reshape an experience. And again, if I think back to the school that I attended, which is over 150 years old in Adelaide, I think that, yes, there may well be a case of engaging with folks like me might be a little bit late now, but there's no reason why you wouldn't start doing that with other people in a cohort and continue to really build out that sense of broader community. So it's, I think, I would say across any phase of school development, it's never too late to think about the community that you want to build and sustain.
In my experience working with new schools, their biggest challenge is to describe their unique mission and purpose clearly, to tell that story in a compelling way, and to just know what makes them unique and different to other schools. And that's always their challenge. And they need some good advisors, some often external people, to help them identify exactly what it is that sets them apart. And if they can do that identity forming piece really early in their school's development, they've got a better opportunity to attract donors and to attract people to the purpose of their organization. For the schools that have been going for a while, I think when we're thinking about philanthropy, the challenge for them is to move their families from a transactional participation in their school to an identity forming arrangement, where it's not only about I give you money and in school fees and you provide an education in return, but I sign up to your school community so that I become part of it, possibly for the rest of my life, at least in terms of the way I see myself. From the cradle to the grave, they somehow belong to that community. So that's their challenge, from transactional to identity. And then for the third category of schools, the way I would phrase their main challenge is continuity and change. They already have a very long history of philanthropic support for their schools. They've got a donor base that has a certain understanding of what the school is all about. And it's really important for them to understand what needs to continue to engage with their donor base and with their constituency. And with some of these things, you should really not mess with. Or if you do change things, you need to be well aware of the consequences. Talking about single-sex to co-ed schools, for example, that can have big consequences. But then on the other hand, schools need to transform and innovate and change. And so it's really important to continue to evolve the school whilst maintaining the core and the identity. So that's their challenge, continuity and change. That's how I would phrase the challenges and the opportunities in those three types of schools.
Let's talk about donor psychology and motivation here. How do donors engage and identify with the cause or the story or the experience that people have in schools?
A way that I would talk about that in really simple terms is by framing a place or a story that donors see themselves in. I'll expand that beyond donors. I would say anyone who feels connected with a school, really understanding what is the motivation, what's the sense of connection, the psychology, if you will, that talks to why someone would participate in a school as a donor, in this context, giving time, voice or money, and how that invitation is facilitated. The compact is, if you will, that I approach you because I want something from you. But if I don't see myself in your environment and don't see that I have a natural place in that, then my question of why I would give you something is a more difficult one to reconcile. I may, because I have a sense of duty or a sense of response, but I'm not really going to feel part of it. The studies that have been done around philanthropic psychology, we look at these questions of identity, connectedness, relatedness, as well as autonomy and competence. So there's a lot of work that identifies the way in which people see themselves, but also how they might see themselves in the context of others as well. Put simply, rather than thinking about what you want as a school, what is it that you might create for those who experience you?
One thing I learned from you, actually, is the idea that philanthropy is no longer seen as something that's self-sacrificial, where the act of donating money is an act where before you had more, now you have less, and you either feel good or bad about that loss of money. Giving as something that's self-sacrificial, it's something about having an identity so closely wrapped up in the cause that you're supporting that transferring some money or some other resources from yourself to that other organization is not actually something that's self-sacrificial. It's just a transfer of assets from one part of my identity to another. I really like that because that just shows how important it is for schools to build those identity-forming relationships with their donor base.
It's a really important observation, Johannes, and I think it really has this shift between what would otherwise be a transactional experience where you simply give me something as an entity and I might give you something or not that is in any way material or tangible, but attending to this sense of self and how we might see ourselves. An interesting proposition that often is touted around philanthropy is this idea of altruism. So people give from a purely altruistic perspective, and there's contention that pure altruism is probably not necessarily the case. I mean, you might find some rare situations where that absolutely might be so, but if, as you've just described, the way in which we give and engage serves a benefit that is about us, then there is something that is, I'll call it, positively self-serving in that sense. So the idea of being self-serving in a positive way, self-actualization, the way in which we feel about ourselves, is a benefit we receive. It's a highly intangible benefit, but it is one that's very real for us as people.
From a practical level now, for the principals, educators, and school leaders who are listening to this, what would you suggest schools do on that practical level to get started?
Focusing on building a community. As I said before, it's never too late to do that. And I think one of the things that reasonably pulls leadership attention is the business of the business. That is, we need to attend to a range of things that actually keep us functioning. But if you then think about the importance of building a community, it actually creates an environment where those other more tangible and absolutely necessary functions can take place. The role of leaders in creating that environment is absolutely unequivocal. It's something that will always be driven from a leadership context, and that's a cultural thing. So the role of a principal, supported by other leadership from a governance perspective and other key leaders, is absolutely vital in creating that sense of community. Attending to the creation of a community, but a community that extends well beyond the immediate life of the school, would be a very important place to consider starting.
Where I always start with when I work with a school is purpose and mission. Do you have a clear enough understanding of what it is that distinguishes your school from any other school, and have a compelling reason why people should support you? It's then also important to understand what parts of your school's operations are core, and the expectation with your core operations is always that these are supported by your current school families and the government. They are not usually the target of philanthropic support. So you need to find those aspects of your operations that complement you achieving your goals, your aspirations through your school. So I understand and clearly articulate what is complementary to you achieving your mission and gather support around that. And then the third part in understanding philanthropy at your school would be to understand your potential donor base and your constituency. Often there are segments within your constituency that require separate targeting and separate messaging and separate ways to engage. You've got your old scholars, your past pupils, and you've got parents, wider community members, and lots of different segments within your constituency that you can approach directly and in a differentiated way. And then finally, I think it's important when you're at the beginning of your philanthropic journey to consider the long game and think about how can we sustain philanthropy over the course of not only the next strategic plan, but really decades and generations. And interestingly, if you have a long view like that, it's not likely to be within the purview of a single principal and not possibly even a single board. This is a strategy that needs to be developed and a system that needs to be set in place that will last and outlast current incumbents of those roles. So thinking really deeply about that. And then maybe my final point would be the fact that we always say culture eats strategy for breakfast. But if we don't yet have a culture of philanthropy, we need to strategize around that. We need to create a strategy that creates and facilitates and molds that culture to be what we want it to be. And so that's just a whole other area to work in. So there are lots of different ways to start thinking about philanthropy in a school setting. All of those together form part of what philanthropy at your school will look like in the future.
But this idea of purpose, I find fascinating as I work with schools and I look at this question of what is the purpose of schools? And I suspect and often find that the case is, well, it's about education. But I'd actually contend it's about creating a foundational basis for young people to contribute to a broader society. And so I think this way in which we think about what our purpose is a root challenge in thinking about philanthropy, because we don't engage people in that primary purpose of education. But if you're lifting the experience up so that students are actually being prepared for a future, regardless of what they come out of school with in terms of marks and the more tangible elements, then creation of good people is an important foundational element of society. So I think that it sounds a little bit lofty, but I think it's a terribly important theme to consider, and how that continuing engagement is manifested over time as well, because that's when we attend to a bigger set of ideas that truly engages people's passion. Interestingly, it's those big, hairy, audacious goals, as Jim Collins calls them, that are the sorts of aspirational ideas that engage donors, particularly around larger gifts. If you can see something truly transformational happening because of what you give, then again, the clear evidence in market is that people are likely to engage, but they need to feel part of it, they need to be inspired by it, and feel they're actually making something that was not there previously a reality. I think how we see this relationship between what schools want and what donors want, we recognise there can sometimes be a real divergence. To a large extent, in the structures that exist around giving in schools, there's already a functional necessity to take a different path around building funds or scholarships or other funds that support difference rather than BAU. But even in the way that's articulated in terms of, you know, what will a building do? Will a building create a nice environment for students to learn in, or will a building create something that enables young people to have a differentiated experience, which means their pathway is amplified or supported at a greater level? And it does extend past the life of leaders. It extends past the life of strategies. And then that's what culturism does. Being really challenging within a school institution about your narrative. Are we just talking about the things that are business as usual, not even regarding the instruments that sit around them? Or are we talking about something that truly lifts people up to a different future, a different experience, and builds on their own sense of being a valued, authentic part of a community?
I've heard you speak before about the concept of asking well. Can you elaborate on what you mean by this?
So often when we ask, we'll ask from a perspective of what we want. But if we take the time and are deliberate about understanding what you might want to accomplish by giving, and we frame our ask around an attendance to that understanding, then that would be what I would call asking well. No one has any obligation to give voluntarily. So what is it that actually creates the sense of connection, of desire, of place that actually takes people into a situation where not only will they ask, but they're actually very ready to be asked as well? But if there's not the mechanism to create that continuing experience, if we are quite transactional about you've attended the event, money's been raised, an experience has been had, that's it, we move to the next thing, then we lose the thread of continuing human experience. Thinking about how we actually capture that and how we continue that, it might be an event, it might be an appeal, it might be some other activity, have a congruence, a relationship about them as well, and over time. So ultimately setting up the situation where someone might consider a gift and a will, that's far more likely to be the case if there's a significant series of experiences over a long period of time where people are really embedded in that school environment, where it's so important to them to continue a legacy of association beyond their lifetime that they would leave a gift and a will. The idea of us just bowling up to talk to someone about a gift and a will without any introduction is actually quite bizarre. The system that you exercise doesn't need to deviate through the stepping in and stepping out of people. So often we see that things stop and restart with some change of staff or change of other engagement leadership. But the system should actually be greater than the sum of the people in it. And that's something, again, I think that starts with leadership in the cultural framing that's actually essential to creating this culture of philanthropy.
And Johannes, what kind of support does ISQ offer to our independent schools?
Well, first of all, we recently developed a really great resource together with Nigel, who helped us to put together a guide for schools thinking about philanthropy and the journey that they might be going on. And that is a great starting point because it not only describes the considerations that we just discussed about purpose, mission, culture, but also quite practically about the structures that a school needs to put in place to be the vehicle that drives philanthropy in their schools. But we can certainly also provide help to schools that are grappling with these pros and cons of the different approaches. If a school wants to go down the route of establishing a separate foundation with its own constitution, its own governance structures, we've got a great alliance partner in Findex, who have actually supported us in the delivery of our recent masterclass about philanthropy. And I know that they've got very helpful and well-considered advice on those questions as well. And so I'd recommend that a school that wants to deeply think about setting themselves up for success, considering all the consequences and especially the unintended consequences of their decisions around structures, that they get in touch with our alliance partner Findex as well.
Do you have any final thoughts or anything that you feel like we haven't said?
The way we think about philanthropy is fundamental to everything we do in serving our communities in a common purpose. So the real challenge there, I think, and it certainly starts with leadership in schools but goes beyond that, is attend to how do we actually think about this and understand it? How do we create a common narrative and understanding around this? And how do we actually execute this into a lived experience? And if we understand that the drivers of people's engagement very much come from themselves rather than the institutions, if you will, that are being served, then we also stand a far better chance of creating effective, optimal, satisfying philanthropic engagement that serves its purpose and serves its purpose over generations into the future as well.
You've been listening to Nigel Harris, philanthropy and fundraising expert, and Johannes Shamoshi, ISQ's School Services Deputy Director. If you want more information around fundraising and philanthropy, you can connect with Nigel and his team via his website, Nigel Harris and Associates. There's also an excellent article written by Nigel for ISQ entitled Empowering Education, Inspiring Generosity that can be found on our member hub. We'll put the links in our show notes. This podcast is brought to you by Independent Schools Queensland, the peak body promoting, supporting and developing Queensland's independent schools. My name's Jeff Lysons. Join us next time for more conversations about topics that matter to independent schools.